Zakhar Moshliach Tzibur, a chazan shehisker atzma in Mahigi Ha'ir L'shana b'tinai kach v'kach. He took the stellar, and when he got the job, he negotiated certain terms. He was paid a certain amount, and he had certain other benefits with tax. He didn't pay the taxes. He didn't pay the membership dues. V'achar kach hisker atzma l'bnei hir hazois in manhigim shneim. He went ahead the second year. They rolled over the terms that were he stayed on for another year. And they didn't discuss all the terms that they had originally negotiated. So the question is that if you negotiate a whole contract in all sorts of terms, and then when the contract expires, you just roll it over again, you just continue, and you don't just go back and discuss each and every one of the benefits or each and every one of the terms. So the question is, are the parties bound to that original agreement? We say that he certainly intended to keep all of the original conditions, and therefore all the other benefits, all the other agreements that they made are still in force, even though they didn't say anything.
Something special about a shliach tzibur that just happens?
No. This is, in Pashtus not, what we'll get to in the Shach and in the Nesivos, possibly, there may be some chalukim, but this seems to be a general halacha, and this comes up most often with real estate contracts. When you lease a house, very often your lease is for a year, for 2 years, and after that, people just stay in the unit, and they don't discuss what's going to be going forward. So the halakha over here is that you assume all the terms and conditions remain in force.
You mean if you had a two-year lease?
Two years,
so it automatically leaves for another 2 years, and as you don't have...
So okay,
always the assumption is that okay, we continue things out, but we're not bound by the
months. Okay, that's a good point. We'll get to that in the Aruch HaShulchan actually says not. He says that we'll get back to that in a moment.
Okay.
In practical sense, virtually every lease says that when the term is up, it continues month to month. So all this, but the question as far as the other agreements, all the terms and all of the what the responsibilities are, those will stay the same. Now we hear the Shach Path says, V'achach hisker atzmai. Pirush zok the Shach shehisker atzmai b'stam liyos etlam oid shana. He says, I'm going to stay for another year, and they don't discuss what the terms are. Hokach, amrinon kimish lehisne. Since they didn't go back and discuss the original terms, v'adei atzmai rishon hisker. We presume they intended to keep the original conditions in force. V'azem ba'isi rivash the mitofayin hey shapirayis. Avulim hisker atzmai the cuts of sach haskiros v'hisker atzmai. What happens if at the end of the year they sit down and they say, you know what, I'm going to raise your rent. We're going to change the salary. Or even if they agree, you know what, I'm going to pay you the same amount for the next year. That means they discuss the salary, but they don't discuss anything else. The other Shach says, Allah is different. V'aday amrid and shapir, we say that midikatsu haschiros, the loy hatanai, since they only discussed the wages and they didn't discuss the tnom, they didn't discuss the other conditions, in kain loy altanai sachru v'alei kikitzva chadasha. If you're silent and let's continue the arrangement, then we say everything stays the same. But the moment you start renegotiating or discuss some of the terms and not the others, we say whatever you didn't discuss is batal. And therefore, if you talk about the salary and you don't talk about the benefits, you don't get any benefits the second year. Because we say, if you don't talk about anything and you just renew it, so you're renewing the same terms. But once you discuss some things and not others, the Shach Paskins, then everything else is gets dropped. Now this is a machlokes, the Levush and the Aruch HaShulchan both say that, wait a second. In a chanami, if you go ahead and you renegotiate some of the terms, you discuss benefit, you discuss your health insurance, and you don't discuss your 401k. So then we say, if you discuss some things and not the others, so whatever you discuss, you get. Whatever you don't discuss, we assume you're not getting, because you didn't bring it up again. What? Right. No, but they say it's like this. They say that's true. If you talk about the health care, you don't talk about the 401k. However, talking about the salary, everyone talks about salary. Certainly, if you're negotiating a raise, so you know why you spoke about salary, because that's changing. Everything else is staying the same. Even if you're staying, but even if you don't, you're not getting a raise. everyone discusses salary. That's the whole point. And therefore, the fact that you discussed only salary doesn't tell us that you meant to be moichel the rest, or that you meant to drop the healthcare benefits. So the Lush and the Aruch Shulchan both argue in the Shach, and they say, if you argue about some, talk about some benefits and not others, whatever you don't talk about, you're going to lose. But the fact that you talk about salary, that does not mean, does that prove you're being moichel the rest, and therefore everything else will still remain in force.
Today, I mean, usually the boss automatically is crazy to ask for feedback on some of the other things. The fact that he doesn't, usually the boss will ask for feedback in productivity and vacation. Mm-hmm. The very fact that he doesn't implies that he's going to leave everything the same.
Right. That's
the salaries of that.
Exactly. That's the Aruch HaShulchan and Levush's point, but they say that's only by salary. But once you start bringing up other things, whatever you don't bring up, we assume you're not going to get, and you're moichel that. Now this is all a case where you rolled over the terms. You said you're going to continue for another year, and you didn't discuss the details. So there we have a shaila where the presumption is, if you don't discuss any details, you're relying on the original deal, and that's why you didn't go ahead and discuss each point again. But Zakhar Rama, the Dafka Shechazu v'Hiskar Atmei B'Shana Shniyah. That's only if you go ahead and you agree to stay on for another year. Avlam Amad Imahin B'Shtika. But if you just stay in silence, no one says anything. The year is up, you just keep on working. The lease is up, you just stay there. No one says anything at all. The other Ramah says a tremendous chiddush. There we don't say the original four conditions stay in force.
Then that's just a free for all.
And therefore it's a free for all. The Shach, who argues in the Ramah, the Shach says, if you follow the Ramah's logic, you know what happens? It's as if you moved into the house or as if you took the job without making any discussion. So what do you get paid? You get paid like a yoyrid. You get paid pachas shabapoylim. Or depending, again, either pachas shabapoylim or a yoyrid. But we totally ignore whatever you negotiated. And it's as if you just walked into someone's house, started painting his house without any discussion. And therefore, everything is completely vatal. Now, the Shach and others take very strong issue
with the Ramah.
It's Shach Mem Dalid. Actually, let me see what we have on the Maram Klamis. Mem Zayin. Right. So what the Shach says is Divei Rav Sarachian. The Masha Kosev came down and Moshe Kushun B'Shem HaRivash Tefayin Hei Ein Mokhrach. The Kosev HaRivash Hosom Elo the Zeloshoinai Afla Gavdam Rinom B'Sayi Perak HaKosev the Kotin Shiasiyu B'Tay. You know, we're not going to go through all the cases, but the Shach's basic point is like this. The cases that the Ramo is based on were a case where a person had a deal with someone. He had a fight. They went back and forth, and they made a pshara. The pshara was for a year, a certain partnership, or they were talking about dealing with a store. So they made it. So the pshara was for the year. The person agreed to pay a certain amount to the other party.
Before the fight,
they had a fight.
After the fight,
they had a fight. The pshara was for the next year. Go ahead and make this payment to this person, and that'll end the fight. They went ahead, and then the business or this relationship continued, and it went past the year. So there, the Marik and the Rivosh say, once the year is up, you have no further obligation.
You pay the payments?
You made the payments for that year. And then the question is, what happens the next year? He didn't specifically say, I'm not going to make the payments. He didn't specifically say, I'm going to make the payments. They just continued without saying anything. So Zaktashach, the reason why after a year you don't make any payments, why? Because according to you, you never owed the person a penny. You had a disagreement. You agreed you're going to make this payment from Manashawim. It was basically a present that you gave him. If you give someone a present, you tell them, I'm going to give you a present for the next year. Once the year's up, you don't have to give him another present. There's no continuing obligation. So in such cases, where really you shouldn't have owed anything, at least according to his story, and it was just a pshara, it was just an obligation you accepted upon yourself, so you accepted it for a year, when the year's up, you have no further obligation. But, Dr. Shach, if you hire a worker, and you negotiate salary, negotiate benefits, and if the term is for a year, and then you continue past the year, it's not a present. That's an agreement. In exchange for your work, this is what you're going to get. This is the salary. These are the benefits. This is the health care. So in such a case, since it's a nekachum memkar, this is what I'm going to give you in exchange for your work, even if you stay past the end of the term, if you continue working, the person keeps on is continuing to benefit from your services, via the shach and almost all the achronim argue on the Ramah, and they say in such a case, all of the benefits and all of the terms roll over. So even though you hire someone for a year, and you negotiate benefits, at the end of the year, everyone continues without saying anything. So most of the placemen will say that all of the original conditions stay in force, and you have all of the same obligations.
But it's also, if you had an agreement for a year, and now it goes over, you can't also automatically assume that now you have another agreement for another year. It's month to month, or
month to month. It's like this. In a lease, when you lease a house, it's virtually all the contracts say that after the term is up, all the conditions remain in force, but on a month-to-month basis. That's what it usually says in the contract. Question is, what happens if it doesn't say anything? So along comes the Aruch HaShulchan and says like this. He says, the Ramah really agrees to this. He said, everyone agrees to this. If the fact that we didn't discuss it, the fact that we didn't specifically say we're keeping the terms in place, the assumption is, as long as you stay in the apartment, as long as you're using my services, you have the same obligations, whether or not we say anything. So all the Ramban means is that going forward, the Baal Baz has the right to say, it's true, any work that you did, I'm going to pay you based on the original agreement. But I'm stopping right now. There's no... No, because if you had...
It's not a year.
Exactly. The term doesn't roll over. As long as you don't say anything, the agreements, the conditions, the benefits stay the same. But there's no commitment, and whenever you want to end the relationship, that's how the Aruch HaShulchan learns the Ramah. Okay, let's continue.
Now, when I have a machlokes just like this, it's easy. When it's Aruch Chaim, so you go after the Rav, you be Mekli, you be Machmer. What do you do when you get two sides and you have a machlokes?
Chesh Mishpah, the general rule is Kimli. The general rule is the Muzik will win. Unless, if you have a clear consensus in the Poskim, one way, the fact that there's Ladas Yochid, there's one place that argues, we say about Ladaita. We say that you can't say Kimli.
The Ramah would be buckled to the other
place. It's hard, it's very... If everyone after Ramah argues, then it would be buckled, but it's hard to be Mavatal Ramah. But very often in these cases, much of Chesh Mishpat involves around Minog. Over here, what are they arguing about? They're arguing about what the presumption is. Now today, every lease that's signed, every written lease says that at the end of the term, it goes month to month. If you have people, it's a yeshivish deal, and they don't even bother going to Staples to get a lease. They just write, I'm renting it for 12 months, and they don't write it in. You have the right to assume that it follows the norms and follows whatever the typical arrangements are. And therefore today, I think everyone would agree, since that's the minhag, and because there's the bulk of the achroinim agree to it, that it would continue, all the terms would continue in force, but the parties can stop it at any time.
So that minhag do away with the shemishpah?
So that's it depends where. Most parts of Chesh Mishpat. If you would come into anything which we can negotiate, which we can make an agreement on, a contractual relationship, if there's a clear minhag, that will govern. Because the halacha could be like the Ramah, could be like it doesn't make a difference. But if I walk in and when I start, I tell you, listen, I'm renting this apartment, but I'm making up with you right now that if I don't say anything, everything stays in place. So the Ramah would agree. That's what you made up. That's what you're bound to. So if today that's how everyone operates, you follow the minhag. On the other hand, if you get into a car accident and you want to sue the person for pain and suffering and emotion and these things, the fact that it's a minhag to do that doesn't change your obligations. And therefore, you'll have to, contractual relationships, you will always follow the minhag because that was the presumed bargain. But in cases where it's uncommon, uncommon issues don't have minhagim. You can't make a minhag out of something that happens once every 10 years. So anything which is uncommon, or anything which is, when a minhag is unclear, some people do it one way, some people do it another way, or if it's not a contractual relationship, in those cases, you will not be able to rely on minhag.
They write in the contract, presenting the disagreement with the judge, the laws of the state of New York.
That's a separate issue. That might be our case.
Does that make a minhag to do like the state of New York?
Probably not. There is a sma that says that if you write that in, you are now bound to the states and the laws of the state of New York, but virtually all the places can disagree with that. They say if that was the intent, it would be usur, and they say just there, so that if in case there's a dispute and the guy doesn't come to Beis Din, you can now enforce it in court. But it doesn't mean to override Klesh and Mishra.
Now they say you can end it now, after the year is up, you can come and decide to stop, but there's always termination, whether it's 2 week notice or it's
100%. Whatever, you'll follow the minhag. There's an Erev Shai that says that as far as notice that you have to give, you'll follow the minhag. Normally in a lease, it's month to month, which means it's in the very least you have to leave at the end of the month. And there's always a notice period anywhere between 2 and 6 weeks, depending on the lease. And you'd follow the minhag.
And Pilem also, so you have to give
them. Correct. That the Chazanish pointed out, we discussed what if you hire someone without specific terms, what the notice period is. The Chazanish either suggests you work with a pay period, that the end of each week, but then he suggests that perhaps the normal amount of time that it takes to either find another job or to find another employee, that there's an implied agreement that I'm going to give you that much notice. Every day that I show up to work and I don't say anything to you, it's like I've committed, I'm going to stay on for at least another 2 weeks. And 2 weeks, I think, is typical today.
Right.
That's the normal notice. A higher level, if you're the CEO of a company, it takes more than 2 weeks to find a replacement. But a typical, worker, a mid-level manager is 2 weeks. A secretary may even be less, because, if they're not doing, there's no skill.
I had a situation in my first apartment when I moved in there. The deal was that the boss was renting a house. The deal was I can move out at any time with 2 weeks' notice, but he needs 2 weeks to get in to the advocate or whatever. So I gave him the notice, and I moved out on the 15th. Mm. So I figured I owed him a half a month's rent, so I paid him a half a month's rent. He comes back to me later, and he says, no, it's 31 days in a month, you stayed, or 29 days in a month, and you stayed 15 on the 15th. Therefore, you owe me an extra, we divided by 29, and therefore, you owe me an extra $25 or so, $75, whatever it is. I like blew my top of there. I was kind of, but maybe it's legitimate. I don't know.
Why not? It's prorated.
Right.
Prorated, he has the right to do that.
Okay.
The bigger question is that sometimes you have to pay for the whole month.
Right.
But if you made up clearly that you give you 2 weeks' notice, then it's not an issue. But very often the leases are month to month, and very often it's done like that because tenants want to move in they leave their old place at the end of the month. So
he wasn't so far off the mark. I was just a yeshiva guy, not familiar.
Not at all. Right. Not at all. Not at all.
I thought he was being very nitpicky, but I guess.
Which he was, but he has the right. He may have had the right to do that.
I have no money anyway. Just
Good for you.
Trying,
Good. It's always that's always the best way to deal with these.
I still have time. Is like what kind of.
He's probably right. So if you stayed for 15 29ths of the month, that's what he's entitled to. The next person that comes in is not paying half. If you'd get another person the next day, he would pay. The other person would say, I'm here for 14 days out of 29. They'd do the math.
The guy who rents an apartment doesn't expect one guy to move out on day 29 and the next guy to move in on day 1. It never works like that.
And it's true.
There's always a downtime.
That's true. In this case, there were 2 weeks downtime.
It's a very low downtime. But
it is. It is. But in this, but he still has the right to ask him to pay for the usage.
Right.
He was there till the 16th. Each day is however much money it was.
The agreement that was those 2 weeks weren't an issue because that was the agreement. But
right.
The question was a half a month or do you go for day by day? That was
right.
So that's an extra day.
That's what they're fighting about. Yeah.
Timing. Divide the number of the month by the number of days. So therefore, I almost ended up. That's really like. Yeah.
Okay, I think he probably was right, but yeah, I'm glad you got out of there. Because there probably would have been other issues that would have come out.
Right, it's a personality.
Yeah. Ha'av shehisker b'noi
m'lacha. We're holding.
We're up. Next page.
When you're a yeshiva guy, you're not that familiar.
100%. You have to be.
A yeshiva guy. Most guys today in the community regular Baal Bas also.
Yeah, you think things that sound absurd to you are really very much business.
Right, I don't think he did anything wrong. It may be a little cheap, but I don't think I think
luckily is right.
Halakhically, even legally, I mean, you're paying per day. You know, if you stayed for 12 days, you would do 12. You know, you would prorate it based on the percentage of the month, or you'd figure out how much it was per day, multiply that by 12. So he did the same thing on 15. A father that rents out his son, he finds a job for his son. Even though he's not supporting the child, the son, we presume, accepted whatever the father did. And he gets paid based on the salary the father negotiated. Even if the father agreed to a very low salary, below market value, still, yes, now the son has the right to say, listen, it's very nice my father agreed to it, but I'm not maskim and I want to get paid more. But until that time, until he formally backs out, we presume that a child is interested in is accepting whatever the father did to him. He's presuming he acted on his best interests, and therefore until he formally backs out, he'd be bound to follow whatever agreements the father entered into on his behalf.
That means not that the father is the boss here? I thought the father was hiring him.
Right, so the father is not, no. The father rent him out to a third party. And therefore, even though a child a father does not own his son, he can't rent him out. But still, since the child knew that his father negotiated for him, we presume that he relied on the father, and that ktsitsa, that agreement, is valid.
What about a wife?
What, if a husband rents out the wife?
Yeah.
That's Evan Ezer, who deals with some bias issues. But a husband can't rent out. He's entitled to the maisi adayim of his wife. He doesn't have the right to rent or
rent. So I'm saying, there should be a different situation.
So is there an assumption that a wife always agrees to what the husband's decision is?
No, usually not.
No comments. No comments. Everyone can talk from their own experience, but the Ramah says this anansadi, this umduno, by a father and a son. It doesn't say it by a wife, and again, I'll leave it to your own discretion.
I'm not saying we should do that. I don't know.
It's not going to work, right? It's not a very practical question. If a person fires his child's melamed, his child's Rebbe, Ministraza melamed, the Rebbe agrees, okay, listen, I had enough, your child is a brat anyway. The father can change his mind and say, listen, I didn't mean it, and please come back and work for me. This Ramah is a tremendous chiddush. He says, even though you have a worker, you can fire him. If you hire someone to teach your child, it's true, the obligation that he has to you, you can release him from. But over here, there's also an obligation to the child. And therefore, since you have no right to be moichol, the obligation to the child, the child's going to lose out on his rabbi, he won't have who to learn with. Therefore, the father does not have the right to fire him. Now, this Ramah is a tremendous chiddush.
Can't send the Muhammad away?
Correct. Now, again, if there's a replacement and the child's not losing out, perhaps he could. But in a case where now the child's going to be stuck, we say, if I fire someone and now I'm stuck, I cause myself the problem, I have no one to blame but myself. But over here, where you fired your son's Rebbe, so very nice that if you suffered a loss, you would have no one to complain because you're the one that fired him. But why should the child suffer? Because of the father's bad decision. And if the Ramah says you can't. Now, the reason why this is a tremendous chiddush is, the Ramah seems to be saying, you know, that a third-party beneficiary is a baal dabur. Now, it's true you hired the Rebbe to teach the child. But who is the Rebbe working for? If the Rebbe is working for you, his obligation is to you. But the way he's working for you is, he's caring for the child. Does the child have any claim against him? So Pashup Shat, you would say no. He's my worker, it has to be for his benefit. If I hire someone to go to your house, listen, I'm in a nice mood, I say, go shovel your driveway. And I hire someone. And then in the middle I come back and say, you know what, I changed my mind, and I fire him. Do I have the right to do that? Of course. He's working for me. It happens to be, it's for your benefit. The Ramah is saying, and I'm not sure when you say this and when you don't, but at least in the case of a Rebbe, we presume it's more than that. It's not just he's working for the father and it happens to be the child's benefit. He has somehow a direct obligation to the child, and therefore he can't be fired. It's a shvera halacha. I don't know how to apply it. My real diskin asks a very basic question. What happens if the father says, I'm not going to pay you?
Right.
Well, that's what we're saying, that the father refused to pay, right?
Well, the father fired him, and now he said, he changed his mind. He wants to bring him back, and the Malami doesn't want to come work for him. So the Malami just can ask, he said, what's going on? The father says, I'm not going to pay you. Is the Malami, now, it could be, if the Malami works anyway, he can force the father to pay. But does he have to work and then go schlep the father to the interior to get paid? Well, it doesn't say some stamina. How can we force the Malami into such a position? So he... And say, I want you to come work for me.
We force the Malami
to work. Right, exactly. So what happens if he... Right. So it's a difficult halacha to understand what the pshat is and when to apply it, but what the Ramah seems to be saying is, at least in the case of a Rebbe, you have an obligation directly to the child. Miu b'shar poyo im amr loy b'fnei shnayim leich mi'imadi. If you'd say to the worker in front of two people, get out of here, you're fired. Pater b'loy mechila. He's pater. You don't need any formal mechila. You don't need any formal kenyan. You can fire someone verbally alone.
This is by Malamed, right?
No, b'shar poyo. This is a different worker. By a Malamed, you're stuck because you have an obligation to the child.
Is there a certain age for that child?
It doesn't. Once he's over a mitzvah, the child can fire you. I mean, he has das, he can be mitzvah.
So basically, up to bar mitzvah, up to 13?
Up to 13, yeah. Even over that, it wouldn't change the fact that it's an obligation to the child. What we mean is that if the child agrees, yeah, the Rebbe, get out of here, then he's fired from both ends. Now, the point over here is that when the father firing isn't enough, because the father fired, but what about the obligation to the child? If it's over bar mitzvah and the child also says, I'm moichel that obligation, and you're released. But if he's under bar mitzvah, or if the child doesn't know about it, in both cases, you should be able to force him to work according to the Ramah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then Ramah continues, a regular worker you can fire, you don't need mechila, you don't need a kinyan. Now, here the Shach brings down Maram argues. Maram says, to fire a worker, you need a kinyan. Verbally saying you're fired is not enough. And the reason is, we've explained a few times that Maram says that you're like a slave. If you buy a slave, you buy a car, you rent a car, and you decide you want out. So just a verbal agreement is not enough. Because it's a kinyan, it's yours. For the next year, this or 3 years, this car is yours. You buy a slave, for the next, until the next 6 years, this is your property. If you want to release him, a verbal release isn't enough. You need some form of ma'isa kinyan. And if the Mordechai says the same thing applies by a worker. If you want to release a worker, you need a kinyan. And just selling him you're fired is not enough.
We're not
ever lavadim. Exactly. So the Ramah, ever lavadim means if he wants to quit, he's allowed to quit.
But you're not ever though. You can't put a shame out on him.
Okay. So that was the machlokes. What pshat in that in kibbutz so avodim was? Some people learned that it means you're not an eved, in which case this halacha wouldn't be true. And the Ramah and the Shach both argue. They say verbally releasing is enough. You don't pass like this Mordechai. Others had learned it's a kavah choymer. It's just like an eved. If he returns, the money goes free. So a worker who says I'm going to leave and now just don't pay me has the same halacha. But it didn't necessarily mean, but he is compared to an Eved. But the Shach passes, based on what you're saying, that halacha we hold that he's not like an Eved, and verbally releasing is enough. But there's an exception. Let's say you get into a fight, and while you're angry, you're yelling and screaming, get out of here, I don't want to see you again. And then, you change your mind, you need him back, and you call him up, listen, I want you to work for me. And he says, too late, you fired me. Zakir Ramah, what you said in anger doesn't count. People say things.
When they've had an agreement to work for a certain period of time.
Right, or Davar Aver. You're fighting with your accountant, and it's April 14th, you don't like the way he's doing the returns, you tell him, get out of here. And you call him back the next day, I got a file today. So in such a case, really, Davar Aver, he doesn't have the right to back out. But he says, I mean, back out, you fired me. So on that, the Ramah says, whatever you say, mitechakas, whatever you say out of anger, doesn't count.
How are you going to prove that?
Well, it depends. If the accountant comes in and denies it, he said, we sat down, we had a formal meeting, and you explained to me how you weren't happy with my work, and you were, and you said it's time for us to move on. If he comes and says that, you're going to have a hard time, unless you're going to need witnesses. But if he comes clean, he says, listen, we got into an argument, you called me a bunch of nasty names, I don't want to work for you anymore, and you released against me. So, you know, in all of Chayesh and Mishpat, there's the halacha based on the inner, and then there's the time v'nithan, how to prove what really happened. But if this is what we establish happened, Rama says, Yeshayimim, that you can retract, you can say that I didn't really mean it.
This comes up, we hold like this?
So most places can do follow it. If you, the Pesach Teshuvah brings down a whole list, there's a Chazam Sefer, Maran Brisk, the Aruch HaShulchan, Darkei Noyon, there's a whole stack that do follow it. There is a Teres Chaim that argues. Let's speak this out of the Shira. Teres Chaim says, there's a Gemara in Bava Basra of a get makusher. There's a way of writing a get where they would write a line, they would fold it over, they have a bunch of witnesses, they'd sign it, they would seal it. It's a whole complicated way to write a get. So the Gemara explains, why do they do this? What's wrong with just writing a get, having two witnesses sign it?
They back out.
So he's like this. They're a bunch of plays with a bunch of kainim, and they have very short tempers. So they get angry at their wives, write a get, give it to her, get out of here, and that's it. The next day, you know, Achashverosh wakes up, remembers what he did. It's too late. She's a grusha already. So Chazal made a get makusher, made this whole thing in order to slow down the process. It would take a little bit longer. And hopefully it took long enough, they'd cool down, and they'd think about it a little bit more, and they wouldn't be so quick to divorce their wives. Zok Teres Chaim. Obviously they're doing it out of anger. It means if you make them wait a couple hours, they're going to calm down, they're not going to do it. And still, the halacha is, if they don't write a get, if they go ahead and they go ahead with it, they write a get and they just give it to her, she's megureshes. So you see, what you do out of anger works. Zok to Kerem Shloim, right? Which is what you're driving at. It depends. What you do out of anger, Yachashverosh, he kills Ashi.
Right,
he's dead. You can't, what you do is done. And the anger, not anger, so go, you know, that's why people go to anger management. Because you do silly things when you get angry. However, Zok to Kerem Shloim, when we're talking about just verbally saying something, there, he says, that's where all the Pesachim argue, and what you say out of anger doesn't count. And halacha, most Pesachim do follow this. If it's just a question of a verbal, what you said, or your moichel, you release a person, if you did it out of anger, you'd have the right to back out, and you'd have the right to say, you know, I can force a person to continue working.
As opposed to American law, what you say and will be used against you.
Right, but in halacha also, by a worker, we just said that if you fire him verbally, that's enough. But in such a situation where it's clear what you want, you know, you had a relationship with the person. The case is it's either a dov or avod, or there's some sort of long-term contract. So what you said in the heat of an argument doesn't become a verbal contract. I mean, I can't talk about American law, but generally you need some sort of, you know, what you say verbally usually doesn't count. You usually need some sort of contract or some sort of consideration or some sort of bargain. Just you know, what you say, you generally can change your mind.
Just make a difference. Right now, so if you have a contract with a guy to work, and let's just say, to make it easy, we're going week to week, so you have to pay the guy a week, and you fire him on Monday, you get angry, you fire him on Monday. Now it's just, okay, he wants to get paid for the week. And you say, no, I want to take it back. You can force him to come back and work for the week to pay him, right?
What do you mean? If he wants to get paid for the whole week?
Only for a week, you fire him.
Right, so it's like this. The discussion over here is when the worker is not interested in coming back, and you need him back for a double rubber. In the flip case, where he wants to get paid for the whole week, you're going to end up winning. Why? Because why do you pay someone for the whole week? Let's say he finds another job. Do you have to pay him for that time?
No.
No, you didn't cause him a loss. Here, he has another job.
Right.
You. If he doesn't want it, that's his problem. So he's going to ask to get paid till the end of the week, and you're ready to take him back, you're not going to have to pay him. You only pay when you fire him causes a loss. In this case, not causing him a loss. Where the salah comes up is the opposite case. Where you need him back. It's a davra avod, and you need a worker, and besides, he was a good worker. And you just, the question, he's trying to take advantage of this argument and what you said to him while you're angry. So there, most places can hold that what you said with Teichel Kast, we can't be used against you, and you would have the right to back out, you'd have the right to force him to work.
If he was working for $1,000 a week, he got angry, you fired him, he can't come back and say, I want $1,500. He was working for $1,000 a week. Now, out of anger, you said, goodbye.
Right.
So when you want him back, he can't.
Right, exactly. What we're saying is we ignore what was said in Teichel Kast. And you have the right to back out, and you can pretend it was never said. Whatever obligations he had to you until now would remain in force.
You can do mitzvah. In this case, you can do mitzvah. He said now he wants to extort money. He says, I'll come back with $1,500. You can say okay, and then only pay him $1,000.
So probably, because if it was a case where he didn't have the right to ask for more money, you know, let's say you hadn't fired him. If it was a davra avud, where he doesn't have the right to leave, and the halacha by davra avud is sechel mimansa, in this case would be the same. This case would be the same, where it's not a davra avud, and it's just the question of he decides he wants more money. So normally the halacha is a pol yochel lasabay, a worker has the right to quit. But we mentioned there's a machlokes, he has the right to quit. But if he wants to continue the job but wants to get paid more, that was a machlokes. Many poskim held he did not have the right to do that. So if you promise him extra money and then at the end you don't want to pay it, you'll have many poskim to rely on because it's you know, he didn't have the right to back out in the first place. Okay, so now we're up to the last the Mishnah's Rav Aaron. Mishnah's Rav Aaron talks about strikes. What is the halacha? Are people allowed to go on strike? Unions? What are the halachas over here? Now the tshuvas, interestingly enough, most of them discuss rebbeim and teachers going on strike. So Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Stern's not here this week, so we're going to take advantage. We'll talk about it a little bit. So what's halacha? Can people go on strike? So there really are two separate questions. The first question is internally between themselves. If some workers decide to go on strike, now it only works if everyone goes on strike. If half the workers show up, or if a quarter of the workers show up, then very often the strike won't be effective because there's enough for the employer to keep the business running. So when they declare a strike, they want to impose it on all the workers. No one's allowed to come in. They picket it. They don't let any scabs. They don't let anyone come in. Do workers have the right to make such rules and conditions? The second set of questions we have to deal with is between the workers and the Baal Bayis. Do you have the right? You know, do you have the right to quit a job? Kilev in Yisrael avodim. Do you have the right to keep your job, but say I'm not coming in until you pay me more? So how do these halachos play themselves out?
Does unionization follow something like that?
That's our discussion. Is it, well, if you can't strike, then there's no point in having a union. Our question is, to what extent is a union recognized in halacha? What could they do? What can't they do? That's a discussion. So the Gemara in Bava Basra that says that the Bnei Yair are able to, see al kitzasan, that people in the city are allowed to enforce rules. They're allowed to make rules. You move into a city, the city is allowed to make rules. And they're allowed to enforce them. If you break the rules, they have the right to penalize you and make you pay a certain amount of money. Now these halachos.
Call them zoning boards today.
Zoning boards. Right. Basically, what it means is that Dina Lachus Adina deals with the king, the government, the person who owned the country. There were always kehillas. There was, each community had their own Zayin Tovei, or they had their own takanas. And the makar that you can make such takanas is from this Gemara. Where it comes up today, probably most often, is in a bungalow colony. You move into a bungalow colony, so basically you're in your own city, and they make rules. They make rules about whatever it is, about sneas, they make rules about how to keep the place running. So the Gemara says you're allowed to make rules, and you're allowed to penalize the people who breach these rules.
I guess that's where Knas and Yeshiva, that would be similar to Knas and Yeshiva, no?
Right, well there it's different. There, I don't know if there are elected officials. There, the point is someone has the yeshiva. When you enter the yeshiva, that you're bound to the terms of the Rosh Yeshiva, Menaha, whatever it may be. There's no yeshiva, there's no this. There's a condo, there's a group of people together. So the group is allowed to make rules. Now there's a huge machloikis how and what kind of rules they're allowed to make. The Mordechai has two pshatim. He says, the problem is why does any given, person comes and says, listen, this is how I like doing things. I don't care about my neighbors. I'm not interested in their opinion. I want to do what I want to do. What makes me have to listen to them? I never elected them. I never gave them. Where does this authority come from? So the Mordechai has two pshatim. His first pshat is, to make rules, you need a unanimous consent of everyone. Everyone has to agree. All the Gemara means is that once everyone agrees to make rules, now you have to listen to them. Even though there's no kinyan, there's no contract, once there's an agreement among the public to make rules, it's now binding and you can enforce it.
It has to be unanimous.
But it has to be unanimous. No. I mean, what it means like this. It means when you moved in, everyone has to agree. These are the rules we're going to follow. Then later on, if a person wants to back out, or if a person breaches the rules, there the public has the right to say, you broke the rules, we're making you pay, we're penalizing you. But to make the rules in the beginning, the Mordechai says, unless it's a question of Isser V'Heter, unless it's clear that. But to make rules, you need unanimous consent.
So a guy comes in later. A guy comes in 3 years after it was already made. He doesn't have an option.
That's a good point. But there already there's a rivash that says that once it's unanimous, people come in afterwards. Once the rules are there, if you move in, you're accepting those rules. There's a lot of people. It's very difficult. That is one pshat in the Mordechai. The Mordechai's other pshat is that no. Majority rules, and if majority of the people get together and they make an agreement, it's binding on everyone. Now, obviously there are limitations, because whenever you have majority rules, so the majority can just decide, you know what, all the taxes should be paid by you. And why not? You'll have everyone but you will agree to that. So obviously there are rules. You can't steal from an individual just because the majority agreed to it. But assuming it is a legitimate rule, which obviously is somewhat subjective, the Mordechai Paskins, you follow the Roif. The Halacha, the Ramah says, it goes by the minhag. Where in the Chassam Sofer, most poskim seem to say the minhag today is we follow the majority. And whenever you have a tzibur, whenever you have a public, the majority has the right to impose the rules.
Majority is 51-49.
Correct. Right. Now you do need
51-49.
Right. Even 50-49. You know, any amount. Now you do need roiv mitzvah kuloi. Everyone has to have a say. Because you have to have everyone together in the room, and you go through, you debate the issue, and then you have a vote. You can't go ahead, and one day, when Yankel isn't here, we have a quick vote. Who says Yankel should pay all the taxes, and do Yankel in? Yankel has to be...
I might be so they did that. One day they were out, and they...
So it has to be a ruboy mitoich kuloi. Everyone has to be here. They have an opportunity to argue and present to debate the issue. The Ber Hayter brings down, makes another interesting point. He says, what happens if I walk around to each person individually? You know, I have a good idea. Let's make Yankel pay all the taxes. And I go to everyone, I mean, except Yankel, and then Yankel's my last person. I say, by the way, I'm going to ask you, do you think you should pay all the taxes? You should just know there are 98 votes against you. So I'm very interested in your opinion, but so there, that also, it's also not going to work. You need everyone together where the miyut has the right to discuss it and debate the issue with the roiv, and the opportunity to persuade them.
In that case, no, you can't persuade it. Now everyone's, that's very excited.
Exactly.
That.
That's the point. That you have to have an opportunity. Even if you go bust a roiv, the miyut has the opportunity to have their case heard and to make their case. Now, the Gemara continues that the same way this is true by a public, everyone in the city can get together, everyone in the bungalow colony can get together, it's also true if everyone in a particular industry gets together and makes rules. If all the taxi drivers make rules, that you know what, after 6 to 7 o'clock, it's going to be overtime already. And we make rules about different rules about the halacha is, they have a right to. Because the same way, everyone in the city is the public, it's a tzibur, for matters of the city. So all the members of a particular industry have the same halacha. It's like it's like the city of taxi drivers, a city of computer programmers. And therefore they get together, they unionize, they have the right to make rules and impose it on the rest of the people in their industry.
So therefore,
based on that,
company, so one taxi company can't come out and say we're going to charge half price after 6 o'clock at night.
So based on this, if you would have either roiv or kol, or everyone in the industry that agrees to certain rules, it would be binding on everyone, and you would not be able to breach it. Now, there is the Gemara continues, and just says makes an important exception, and that is if there is a chacham around, you have to get his okay on any of these takanas. And the way the Rishonim explain it is because we're afraid. The taxi drivers, who are they worried about? The taxi drivers. So they're going to make rules that hurt everyone else if it's for their benefit. So that's why if there's a chacham, you need a chacham to sign off on the agreement that it's a fair agreement, it's a fair takana, then it's binding. But if it is fair, and he signs off on it, it's binding, and you can enforce it against the other members. Based on this, there are a number of tshuvas that say, if you have a union, if all the workers are unionized, certainly they have the right to make rules and they have the right to force everyone to follow these rules. And if you don't follow them, you have the right to penalize them. Now what happens if some members are unionized and some are not? So Ramesha says, as long as roiv of them are unionized, they should have the right to force them here. So there Rav Moshe says not so fast. Why? Because what's the point that why is majority enough? Because we say these people, all the taxi drivers, are considered one city, and therefore we follow Roiv, that's the Minog, they can make rules. When you have union members and non-union members, the union, by definition, only sticks up for its members. When they negotiate on their own behalf. The non-union members don't get the same benefits. So there, he says, we look, they're specifically excluding. They're saying, we're our own group. When we talk only for ourselves. In that case, it works both ways. The assembly, they don't negotiate on behalf of the other ones. They can't now impose their rules. So in such a case, the Rav Moshe says they cannot enforce their rules on non-members. An exception would be perhaps, and the Netzach Yisrael points out, you know, he doesn't address Rav Moshe, but in a case where everyone's unionized and one worker comes in, he says there, that's like the case we mentioned before, that's where you move into a city, you have to accept the rules. But when it's Yesh V'Yesh, even if the majority are unionized, you don't have the right to impose the rules. So based on this, most places can say in a typical case, a union has the right to set rules. They have the right to, if they call a strike, they can certainly force their members to obey the strike. And everything would be, so far so good. So far it seems that unions are okay in halacha. Problem is like this. Problem is that it's one thing they can enforce rules amongst themselves. And they can tell their workers that you can't. But what about forcing the employer? What right do they have to force the employer to accept something so like that? The employer is not a member of the union. He's the one that fights the union. So therefore, whenever they call a strike, it's one thing among themselves, they want to force everyone to listen, that's fine. But we still have to deal with, are they allowed to call a strike in the first place? If you're working for a person, do you have the right to just suddenly say, I'm walking off the job?
Massive double oven.
So like this, if it's normally Paul Yochel Asabar, a worker is allowed to quit whenever he wants. But you're only quitting, they're only calling a strike if it's a double oven.
You're saying you want your job.
It's like this. There are a number of problems. First of all, it's always, by definition it'll be a double oven, because if it's not a double oven, they're not going to call a strike. No one's going to care about it. If they're calling it, they wait until there's a snowstorm, and there's 2 feet of snow, and they say, you know what, we want better pay. You know, call us back. So there's always a double oven. The second point you're bringing out, which is correct, that poli ochla means I can quit. I go home, I quit my job, you find another worker. Here, I'm not working, I'm not letting you hire someone else. We're picketing. There's no such thing in halacha. And lastly, like we mentioned before, it's one thing you're allowed to quit. But if you want to keep your job and just get paid better, it doesn't work. That's to be asked for better pay. And that we saw in many places say you can't do that. So therefore, in straight halacha, there's no room for a strike. Yeah, it's davar avod. You're trying to keep your job. There's no such thing. Afal pikein, when you're striking to enforce something which is legitimate, you know, the Baal Bayis is not following the rules. There are some places in the Netzach Yisrael and in Rav Aaron, which also sounds like it agrees to it. Say either because of minog or because of dino machus dino. When you have a union and you hire workers, you know you're in for it. You know, there's a collective bargaining agreement. You know, these are the terms. If you don't agree to what they demand, they retain certain rights. In such a case, it's like the worker when he walked in and said, listen, I'm taking the job, but you should know, when you need me the most, I'm going to walk out on you. If you accepted it, you can't come afterwards with complaints. If Aaron says Dina Machus, Dina would apply.
Is there such a thing as a Jewish collective, as a union? Is there
in Eretz Yisrael? Sure. Eretz Yisrael, I mean, the Israeli good is very much a socialist in the net, perhaps less today than it was originally, but there are huge labor unions there. So therefore, man, boys can say, as long as it's a legitimate strike, it's for a legitimate reason, you know, you still need a chacham, perhaps, to okay it, but you would have the right to back out. However, that's all in a regular job. If you're dealing with a malamed, now, besides the davar avod of mammon, what do you deal with dini mammonis? So you can have minhag. You can have dini malchus dini. But in the case of a malamed walking out, now their kids are running wild, it's bezel teira.
You have an obligation to the child.
Right. You have a host of other issues. So here, come on, all the place can say that to strike, for a Rebbe to strike is going to be awesome.
What about the obligation to the third party, the one who's really paying, the parents?
Right.
So would that change anything?
Not really, because over here, the point is that since by quitting or by striking they're going to cause harm to the children, the din malchus hadina does not permit someone to cause harm to children. Now, what about English teachers?
So they're supposed to work with that baby.
Okay, no, all of the tshuvas paskin. All the tshuvas say you're not allowed to strike. But if you look carefully, every one of the tshuvas is talking about a case where they negotiated an agreement, prices went up, and they wanted a cost of living increase. In other words, the school was meeting their obligations, but they were saying it's not enough. We want to reopen the deal. In a case when they're not paying, we're not getting paid. It doesn't make any. There should be no reason not to strike. I agree. I'm going to teach the child, and I'm going to get paid. If you're not going to pay me, what? That's not called striking. You're striking. You're that hole is on strike. They're not paid. So in such a case, I don't know of any makar that says there would be this. This whole discussion wouldn't apply. Now, of course, obviously, it's not something you take lightly. There is a question of Bittul Torah, but it's certainly if the Rebbe needs to find another job, if he wants to strike, he'll get it. And we're, this discussion doesn't apply. The discussion here is they're striking for better pay, or better terms. Now, what about English teachers? English teachers, of course, should be able to do it then. It's a regular job. But here, Rav Aaron, now, this is Mishnah Rav Aaron, is written by Rav Aaron Cutler. Now, in Lakewood, they don't have English.
There's no English in Lakewood?
No. The Siftas, you know, almost. Elementary schools have a little bit. Most high schools have nothing. Some of them have a little bit.
No English in there?
This is Rav Aaron, so you can imagine what he's going to paskin. So he says is it's the same devar of it for two reasons. First of all, he says English might be good, might not be good. He doesn't discuss in the truth, but to have children running wild in the afternoon because their teachers are on strike is a devar of it. So forgetting about what they're learning, the fact that they're not being supervised, that itself is a devar of it. And then he says, also, the quicker, if you had English, you'd finish English, they'd be able to learn, they'd be able to learn a little bit more. It's only because they have to learn a certain way, there's a curriculum. So then you strike, it's going to take that much longer to finish the curriculum, he says, it's Bittul Torah as well. And therefore, he says, it's going to be also for English teachers to strike also. Now, what's interesting is both Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe both say, even though this is true halacha, if it's clear that by striking, if the Rebbeim are not getting paid enough, and they can't survive, and it's clear that by striking it'll be a couple of days and then things will be masudra, the parents will come through, the mahal will come through, then it could be then it's mostly to do it because in the long range the children are better off. He says it's not a decision you can take lightly, but in such cases it'll be mutter. I'm just going to stop here. I'm a little